Oh, well, I see here things are really getting groovy here, right? I'll tell you, look at this little note here. It says, Frank Sinatra, Peter Fonda, Roger Vadon, that's Jane Fonda's husband, Ross Hunter, and Larry Hagman all have midi skirts now. Oh, Larry, I know Larry. That's funny. Yeah, the midi skirt is... Men are taking to a thing, man. Men. Oh, smashing. I know a guy who joined the drum and bugle corps. You know, one of these drum and bugle corps with the kilts and all that. You know, they had bagpipes and everything. He joined it for one reason. He really wanted to find out what these guys wear under kilts, and he did. I'm not kidding. He joined this thing for that reason, and he had studied under Gene Krupa as a drummer. You know, and. He says, here I'm, you know, staying with Gene Krupa, and he said, I'm playing in the drum and bugle corps. He said, for what? Find out what they wore in the kilts. And I said, really? He said, yeah, they got 13 yards of material in the kilts. And he said, it's really great. He says, I like my kilt. And I said, well, what do you wear under them? He says, you don't think I'm going to tell you? It took me 4 years to learn how to play that damn drum. Get into it. He says, forget it. He says, do you know that is one of the unspoken things that they'll never tell you? And you'll never guess who this guy is I'm talking about. It's an actual true story. It's Joel Sherman. Down at Nat Sherman's. Yeah, Joel. Down there. So if you go into Nat Sherman's, and I might as well do a commercial right now. If you go into Nat... I didn't mean it this way, but I might as well. If you go into Nat Sherman's at 1400 Broadway, this is the place where they make these great handmade pipes and all that, and have a great collection of pipes and wild-looking cigars and stuff. The great tobacconist, 1400 Broadway, between 38th and 39th, you go in and ask for Joel. And Joel will come over, an old friend of mine. He's also a private pilot. And Joel will say, what can I do for you? And you say, listen, come on, give me the dope, please. What do they wear under them kilts? Now, when you pick yourself up on the sidewalk out there, in front of Nat Sherman's after that jazzy remark, you at least will carry away with you the memory of one of the more exciting moments of your life. Joel has a fantastic left hook. So that's Nat Sherman's at 1400 Broadway. Are you ready for this? Guaranteed to go in snow or General pays the toll. First time you've ever had a General pay for anything for you. That's right. General Tire gives this unconditional guarantee with every snow tire purchase. And right now, your General Tire specialist is offering the fantastic Winter Cleat SLP tubeless black wall for as low as $16.95, size 650 by 13, plus 178 federal excise tax. Now remember, friends, that's white walls and larger sizes are also available at great price decreases. This tire has four full plies of Nigen nylon cord and deep self-cleaning DuraGen rubber cleats that dig and grip. It's a fantastic tire, so don't worry about winter driving. Remember, you go in snow, or General pays the toll. Now, let's see, where can you see that? You can see it in picturesque Newark. See Matt Kiselik at General Tire Company, 170 Clinton Avenue. And in Stamford, Connecticut, see your General Tire Specialist at South Street and Station Place. If you will, please, Tonally. Boy, let's go. Let's get underway here. Rick, tick, 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 that's it, that's it. Ah, yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. Sorry, it ain't skipping. Doesn't matter. Everything skips on that turntable. I think it's that turntable there. Yeah, hey, it had to happen. I think I predicted this not long ago. Special special message here now. Now, here is the information that I've been threatening for some time. You know, this is there's a lot of confusion about it, but I'm going to set you straight. From now on, I will be heard. Now, listen carefully. At 9:15. Also, dig this, man. I will also be heard at 10:15, which is our regular time. I'm not sure this is going to continue. I hope not, really. That's a real you-know-what buster. However, as of Monday, as of next Monday, I will be on at two times. In other words, I'll be on for 2 hours, or from 9 o'clock to 11, really. I'll be on from 9:15 to 10, and then there's the news. And I guess Lester Smith does that news, right? And then at that point, when he's through, at 10:15, just like tonight, I come on again with a different show, entirely different. And that's the way it's going to be this coming Monday. Now, you know, it's a funny thing about times. Now, that's going to be just, as far as I know, fairly temporary. In other words, the two time segments, when the thing is all straightened out, the probability is that I'll be on from 9:15 to 10, which is good, I think. You know, you're just going to have to make some kind of adjustment, mental adjustments. You know what we find out about time in radio? It's a funny thing. In radio, at least in my experience, and this is probably true of television, anything else, the people have all kinds of little security blankets in one thing and another. And things not only should be in their right place physically, and so you walk into your house and all the furniture should be in the place that you want it, you feel secure with it here, but also they should be in their right place in that curious ocean, that ineffable thing called time. And you'll get used to it. From when I start on at 9:15, after a few months, you wonder how you ever could have listened to it at 10:15. So anyway, that's the story. As of Monday, 9:15 and 10:15. Bum, ba-dum, bum. Hey, you know, do you remember a couple of months ago I predicted, you know, when all this hijacking was going on, all the airplane hijacking and everything, I predicted that it would eventually happen, and it did. It just happened in Philadelphia. Did you hear about it? A guy hijacked a bus in northern Philadelphia Saturday night and forced the driver to take him to New Jersey. Which, I don't know. I mean, he has to go, forces him to go to Jersey. The driver told police that the hijacker boarded his bus shortly before 9 p.m. at a layover stop at 19th Street and Hunting Park Avenue. And there was nobody else on board the bus at the time. And the hijacker, which is described as 6 feet tall and carrying a .38 Smith & Wesson, pointed this Roscoe at the driver's head and says, "Take me to Jersey." Well, he did. He proceeded north on Hunting Park, and then he turned east towards the Taconi-Palmyra Bridge, which leads to Jersey. He drove across the bridge, paid a 50-cent toll, and continued as he was directed to the Pennsauken Mart out in Pennsauken, New Jersey. The hijacker got off in front of the Eric Theater and then fled. And there it is. I knew it had to happen. I'm going to Jersey. Take me to Jersey. He hijacks a bus. Well, now, you know, buses have always been the scene of some exciting things in my life. Did I ever tell you about the most exciting thing that ever happened to me on a bus? Well, I'll tell you about it. This was when buses used to go, when Fifth Avenue was two ways. Now it's only one way. And incidentally, if there are any kids listening tonight, please turn off the radio. This is a story not for kids, okay? And if there are any, you know, nice ladies with blue hair listening tonight, please don't listen. I believe they're having a salute to Julie Andrews right down the dial. I think you'll like this. You know, selections from Sound of Music, all that stuff. The special dedication by John Gambling's on down. So get down there. This is not for you. I mean, I have led a checkered life. And I have indeed. And I've seen many things in this checkered. You know, I always feel sorry for people who've led a straightforward life. you know, the straight, really what could be called, and if I may borrow a McLuhan-esque phrase, a linear life. A linear life is a life of rectitude. You know, early to bed, early to rise, makes your head tired. But that's, you know, who the people who really do all these maxim stuff, never lived the on the borderline of existence, who never stay up late, get up early all the time. It's we people who rarely see a day that ends before 4:30 a.m. who see what life is about, ultimately. And you remember when Fifth Avenue went two ways? Well, do you recall when they used to load the buses down there around the arch down in the village? And the buses would stay down there for a while, and then they would start up Fifth Avenue. You recall that? Well, Shepard is bound on one of his nefarious errands, which is no business of yours, you crumb. And it is now about 3 a.m., and I'm down deep in the heart of the village. And I see this bus standing over there on Fifth Avenue by the arch. And a bus driver sitting in there with his feet up on the dashboard reading a comic book. And it's just waiting. You know, they used to wait down there. They had a schedule. So I figured, well, I might as well take a bus. And I was going to go back uptown. I was going someplace. So I wander over to the bus, and the door is closed. So I knock on the door, and the guy looks out. What do you want? I said, when are you going to start? He says, a couple of minutes. So he says, get in. So he opens the door. I get in. It's cold out. It's winter. So the bus was nice and warm. It's lit. So I go in, and I give him my money. And he says, okay. So I go back. I usually, when a bus is kind of empty, I usually sit near the rear. I don't know why this is, but I do. And I'm glad this time I did. So I sat near the rear of the bus, and I'm the only guy on it. See, so I sit down, and I had a paperback book with me, which I always carry in case of emergency, and I need to read something. So I'm reading this paperback book, and I hear another knock like that, and there's another guy gets on, and the bus driver says, come on in. So he gives him the money, and he sits down. He sits about halfway over on the other side, about halfway up to the bus. Well, this goes on like this for about 10 minutes, and every couple of minutes somebody would come along. Now we have a little band of people in the bus. It's cold. It is now about 3:30 a.m. It is the village. Okay? We're all sitting in the bus. There's about, I would guess now, I'd say probably 12 to 15 people, which in a bus is not much because we were all spread out. This is one of these big Fifth Avenue babies, you know? So the bus driver says, and there were different, you know, all kinds of people. There were little old ladies, one little old lady, as I recall. And there were a couple of nondescript-looking men and a couple of hippie types. You know, just a mixed bag. A couple of people who were on a date or something. And me, looking shifty back there with my shades on. And speaking of shifty, this is WOR New York. It just, you know, just came to my mind. This is WOR New York. And how about a Christmas fund? You got a Christmas fund? How about sharing your Christmas, friend, with needy children in hospital wards throughout the WR area? By the way, this is a great charity. We've been involved with this for years, and it's really one of the few. Well, I shouldn't say that, but I happen to personally know about this one, and I subscribe to it. And to help provide all these kids, you know, there's a lot of kids in needy hospitals and that all over the WOR area, and they. WR for many years has given them gifts, and they're beautiful gifts. They're from the best department stores in New York. These are not little toys, great gifts, you know. And they give them individually wrapped gifts of new clothing and toys to all these needy kids that are in hospitals. And they're given to them personally. They're not sent over in a big truck. So send your check or money order today to the WOR Children's Christmas Fund. That's Box 710, Times Square Station, New York 10036, and I think you'll find it's a good one. Now, anyway, I have to get back on this, because sometimes when I wake up at 3 in the morning or 5 in the morning, I look out and I see a bus going by, and I think of this fantastic scene that just happened to me. Just, you know, the wildest stuff that happens to a person can never be predicted. Whenever you prepare, you know, for a big party or something like that, You forget it a week later. You don't even remember it. But it's something totally without warning, without usually logic, without any meaning, that really sticks with you all your life. And this is a moment. I'm sitting in the bus. It's 3:15, 3:30. The bus driver says, and I remember he's sort of a fat guy. I wonder if he's listening. He's kind of a fat guy. Look, I'll tell you who he looked a little bit like. Actually, he looked a little bit like Jackie Gleason. You know, Jackie Gleason always plays a bus driver. Ralph, is that his name, Ralph? Or is Ralph Crandon his buddy? Old Ralph, see? And he's sitting there with his uniform on. He's kind of fat guy, and it's cold. And he sticks his comic book. He sticks it down at the bottom of the dashboard, and he says, "Well, okay, here we go. Everybody ready?" Blah! He starts this bus, and he pulls out into Fifth Avenue. Now, as you leave the village, if you go past 14th Street, roughly, on Fifth Avenue, late at night, there's nothing. It's really dark. There's just no action there for blocks up until about, possibly till you hit roughly 34th Street, something like that. But these are all offices and everything, all dark, see? And we're driving along Fifth Avenue, and I'm just sort of casually looking out of the window and watching the scene as it goes by. I dig bus riding, by the way, and then I'm looking out, and I see the, you know, stuff going by. I like to look down in cars when people drive up next to me, and the cars are going by. And I hear people talking in the bus. Every couple of blocks, we stop, and the bus driver would let somebody off. We'd pick somebody up. And now we are roughly somewhere in the early 20s when this first happened. About two blocks before, a large lady had gotten on. And she was wearing one of these white coats with what looked like a big rabbit fur collar on it. Had a big whitish with black tips, big tremendous fur collar. And she was I'll tell you, she was really something. This lady gets on. And she had that kind of a loud voice. And she was a lady of her roughly uncertain years, as they say in France, a lady of certain years. So she gets on and she says, "Hello, baby," she says to the bus driver. And he says, "Oh, where are you going?" She says, "Does this bus stop at 57th Street? And he says, "Yep." And she says, "Here you go." And she gives him the dough and she sits down in the front seat. And we continue on. Well, the minute she got on, she radiated something. There was just an aura around her. There was kind of an electric field, a magnetic field around this lady. And she had her hair piled up on the top of her head. And she was really something. And she had earrings. She had these big rhinestone earrings. And she was wearing a pair of black glasses, very dark shades, with blue rims with rhinestones, okay? So she sits in the front. We went about 20, maybe 30 feet. He just got the bus in gear. She's starting to roll again out in the Fifth Avenue when she starts to sing. And it was one of these kind of singing to yourself kind of thing. "I'll let you out of that, oh, yeah, oh, Basin Street. I want to turn up a Basin Street." And people began to look up. You know, people tend to get within themselves when they're in a bus, especially when the bus is half empty and everybody's sort of separated. And you could see these heads popping up, guys looking around newspapers. And you could see these two people ahead of me that were on a date. They're looking up there, and she's singing, "Basin Street, yeah, right, baby." And she's a little bit bag. She's just a wee bit in the bag. "Oh, Basin Street. I want it." And then she hits the bus driver, sort of friendly-like, you know, between the shoulder blades. She just hits her, "How are you, baby?" "You want to see a lot of stuff. Basin Street." And he turns around. He says, "Yeah, I do, baby. I see a lot of stuff on this run." "Yeah, I sure do." And he goes, meaning, of course, you're one of them. And she goes, "Basin Street." And she spots a guy. Have you ever had a drunk level in on you? Well, she spots a poor guy who is obviously trying to burrow his way down into his shoes, sitting in the seat directly opposite her. Now, if you know these Fifth Avenue buses, the seats in the front face each other, right? They face, and she sees this guy, see? She says, "Oh, hey, how are you? Hey, you having a good time tonight? You're out hanging one on, huh? How are you, baby? Oh, Mason Street. I want to see you, Mason Street. Hey, that's a nice tie you're wearing. I'm talking to you, Mason Street." Well, the guy looks up, and he made the classic mistake that guys often do. He was polite. In other words, just doll is singing to him and talking, and he answered. She said, "Oh, it's a very nice tie you got there. It's the street thing. Where'd you get that tie? Hey, folks, I got a guy with a lot of beautiful ties wearing. Hey, show the people your tie. It's the street." He says, "Oh, it's, thank you, I got it, Saks." "Oh, I say, it's the street thing. It's very beautiful. And she is really feeling groovy. You just see she's radiating life force. We were in the presence of an earth mother. And that was, you know, you get the strange feeling. You know that feeling that you see once in a while around Shelley Winters? Like, it's a street. Hey, what's the matter with all you people? You're all sitting there looking real. What's that? Come on. How about having a little party here? Come on, let's go. Hey, you, over there back there, come on. Well, she's now addressing the entire bus and telling him that, you know, they're all pretty square, and why don't we get on the stick and have a little party here? We stop again, and a couple of nice little ladies get on. And with that, our girl spots him. She says, "Oh, yeah, babe. Oh, what are you doing out at this time? Oh, yeah, I mean, you're having a lot of fun. Basin Street, eh?" Kept singing Basin Street. Well, we are now roughly in the vicinity. We have traversed past 34th Street, and we are now moving up Fifth Avenue. We are right in the heart of the DEAUX district. We are in roughly the 50s now. With that knowledge, you can appreciate what happened. This is a well-lit area. The gal gets up, and she says, "Hey, I want a party here. Come on, let's have a little fun." She takes off her coat, and she is wearing this very, very form-fitting black dress. Now, she's one of these ladies who shouldn't... Well, you know, there's a certain type who wears a dress always 2.5 sizes too small for them. They look a little bit like a Hebrew national salami. And this black dress was so tight you could hear it thrumming. She said, "Oh, let's have a little party here." She takes her coat off and throws it down on the seat behind her. And now she's standing in the middle of the aisle, and she's got a hold of one of the straps. And she's swinging back and forth. Basin Street, I want to... And she starts to sing real loud. Oh, Basin Street, la-ba-da-da-da. And she's singing these blues, you know. You can hear it singing away there. Basin Street. You can hear the music. And my God, everybody in that bus suddenly comes to life. She's going, Basin Street. And she takes her scarf off and throws it. She's dancing in the middle of the aisle. Oh, come on, you stick in the mud. How are you, baby? And she chucks this guy under the chin. With that, she takes the zipper, which is on the side of her dress, and just zips it up. Basin Street. And her dress falls to her feet. This large lady of uncertain years is wearing a black bra and a pair of black panties. And I want to tell you, there was nothing but lace and all kinds of little fluffy things with a couple of little pink ribbons in the right places. And she's walking around with her earrings flashing in the neon sign. Come on, Basin Street. Let's have a little party. Oh, Basin. And we're driving along Fifth Avenue. Well, at this time, you can see the bus driver is in a panic. You know, he sees her in the rearview mirror, and her bottom is moving back and forth, and she has an ample one. Well, obviously, this lady knew exactly what she was doing. this was either a retired stripper who, you know, like an old war horse, felt the call that she had to return to the harness because she saw a lot of bald heads sitting around and guys looking glum. Or she was a lady who was in another profession. She knew what she was doing. We walked along. You reset that, Big Tony. We drove along Fifth Avenue, and this bus driver, he was really, you could just see, his neck is red, and he's looking up into the mirror all the time, and all the rest of us just sort of sat there. And everybody, it was a funny moment because you could see half of the bus dug it, the other half were totally confused by it. And for one brief moment, for maybe 20 blocks, there was a little tiny caravan of lust roaring up Fifth Avenue. Well, I had to get off, see, and I was getting off at 57th Street up there by Tiffany, of all places. And a couple of other people had to get off. See, this guy had to stop. He missed at least five stops. He didn't know what to do with her. See, you don't just drive up to a lot of people, you know, just naked ladies standing there swinging around. So he pulls up at 57th Street. She's worked her way about halfway down towards the end of the bus now. She's moving her way down, see? And she's swinging away. And she's singing, boy, she's really singing. And nobody could really get mad because she had such a fantastic feeling of joie de vivre. I mean, you know, you can't get mad at life itself, but there was life coming out of that baby, you know. She's just swinging away. Oh, come on, let's go have a party. And she kisses this big fat guy sitting about halfway down through the crowd there, and he's trying to read his daily news, you know, pretending he ain't with it, see? And she kisses him and bites him on the ear. And he looks up, and you see his face is red. And then finally, we pull up to 57th Street, see? And about five of us get off. And the bus driver, real quick, he closes the door, and they go roaring on in the darkness. And the lights were all lit up in the bus, and I could see this lady swinging away there. And you could just see it disappearing in the distance off towards Central Park. Oh, baby, I chill. Come on, let's go. Now, I don't know whether anybody... We ought to have a reunion. You know, the old gang that sat in that bus. But I'm sure that a lot of guys, you know, out of this group, there must have been probably a total of 20 people who were in the bus at one time or another when this fantasy suddenly broke out. And I'm sure they went home. Some of them, I bet some of them never told anybody at all about it. And the other guys that did, I'm sure the other guys that told about it, who told people about it, just never believed it. Well, I say yes. It happened. I was right there. And I would like to know what people who were standing on the street thought. Because we would roar past the stop, and there'd be three or four people standing there, see? And she is a big lady. You know, these Fifth Avenue buses have these huge windows. So obviously they had to see all that flesh. All those black bras and stuff going. I can see a guy coming home, you know, he misses a bus and he's an hour late. He says, you wouldn't believe it, I'm standing in the bus. The bus comes along and they go right past and there's this naked lady in the bus and all these people are watching her and she's singing and yelling. They went right on by. What kind of nuttiness is this? Well, you know, this is bus scene. One other thing speaking of buses, another thing that happened in the bus that I saw a wild moment in the bus. I was on a bus going out to this town in Jersey, this Princeton. You know, it's a very elegant town, and all these official people go out there, professors and stuff. You could just see, if you stand in various bus lines, you can almost tell the different neighborhoods by the kind of people that are waiting for the buses, see? Well, I get on this elegant bus, and all these, you could just see, you know, reverends and all kinds of people going out to this elegant community. And in the middle of the crowd, waiting to get on the bus, I saw there was a discordant element. And there were two girls, and I mean, these were real, let's put it this way, Well, I can't quite come out and say it, but you could see these ladies had a well-established profession. And one of the older professions goes well back before they begin to even practice medicine. And possibly even back to the Garden of Eden. There are those who hold that theory. But nevertheless, these two gals, and they're both reading in this elegant bus. All these people are all sitting there. And the bus was crowded. It was so crowded that about half of us had to stand. And these people are all sitting around reading the New Republic. They're reading Harper's, the Atlantic Monthly. And these two gals are standing in the middle of the bus, holding on to the hanging strap. And again, I could hear that music, see? They're hanging, and they're reading the National Enquirer. There's a giant headline. It says, "Father kills seven, makes children into the cake of soap." Story picture inside. Interview with axe murderer. Yeah, I killed him. I made him into a bar of soap. And that's that. And all these people are looking up over their magazines. They're wondering why they're going to Princeton. Well, they probably had, a little freelance work out there. You never know. And I kind of dug that scene. I'm sitting there, and when they finally got off, they got off in this stop. Just, that's a very elegant town. They just got up there yelling and hollering, jump off the bus, and you could smell this cheap perfume behind them, the whole bit. Like, and it was funny to watch these, you know, there's a certain kind of, how can I put it? There's a certain kind of sterility about life among the proper people. You know what I mean, Tony. You've been in the Army, you know. There's another way to live. And there's a certain kind of nice, soft, how can I put it? The pablum, cream of wheat sterility. And this permeated the bus, this other life. Yeah, you could just see these people looking, old ladies looking up with anger. You could see you could smell the perfume, the whole bit. But it was more than just the perfume. It was the whole thing they represented. And these two got off the bus, and everybody's looking out of the window when the bus pulled away. It was one of these little towns where you can just see, you know, people get out, and you can see them on the streets. People are all looking like that. And the bus roared on, and all of us sat there for a moment. Of course, I'm continually passing in my life. I keep passing among the respectable, you know. I'll tell you how I do that. I do that by a certain way of wearing my hair. You could pass for respectability easily in this time. But nevertheless, buses have always been the scene of great moments in life. Like this friend of mine, I shouldn't tell stories about friends of mine, but I have this friend of mine who's a doctor, and it ain't Frank either, it's another doctor, and he's a very respectable-looking guy, and he had a terrible thing happen to him in a bus when he was going to medical school. He was uptight for dough. And by the way, do you know that was the original meaning of uptight? A lot of people think uptight means nervous or tense. Uptight meant no money. That's the actual meaning of uptight. So if a guy comes up and he says, "Oh man, am I uptight?" That didn't mean he was nervous. That just meant he had no scratch. That he was, Tap City. And so, or don't you know what Tap City means? So nevertheless, my friend, see, he was really uptight. He had no dough at all. And he was working his way through one of these miserable little scholarships and living from hand to mouth. And he discovered that the laboratory where he was taking biology was in dire need of frogs, you know, for dissecting and all that stuff. And so he discovered that they spent a lot of money buying frogs from some place out in the East where they would buy them like two dozen at a time or maybe 50 at a time and pay a lot of dough for them. So one day he goes up to the professor and said, "Say, where do you get these frogs, professor?" And he said, "Well, we order them from the International Frog Cartel Corporation of East Ipswich, Connecticut. And they arrive every 2 weeks, and we pay a lot of money for those frogs. Those are elegant frogs." And he said, "Well, say, if I brought some frogs in, would you buy them from me? If I sold them to you cheaper than the International Frog Corporation and Cartel Incorporated of East Ipswich?" I said, "Well, yes." says, we'd be glad to buy frogs from you. We're always buying frogs. So he got an idea. And so that night, he gets a big flashlight, one of these big types, you know, with a big battery, and he sets out into the swamp, which was a good, maybe 5-10 miles away from where he lived in Cincinnati. But you had to get there by way of buses and stuff. So he goes all the way to the edge of town. He trudges off into the swamp with his light and a gunny sack. And he'd been from a farm, you see. He'd been a farm guy, so he knew about that. So he goes off into the swamps, and sure enough, by about 2 o'clock in the morning, he has got a gunny sack full of great big croakers, the big green ones, the big beauties. So he packs a gunny sack full, and he comes back to school. The next day, he goes into the professor and says, I have a bag of frogs here. Well, the professor was astounded. See, there's beautiful frogs. And he pays him $15 for a whole bag of frogs. Now he's got, he just thinks to himself, $15 a night I can make selling frogs. So he goes over to 3 or 4 different labs and other schools in town, and they said, sure, we'd love to have frogs. He said, by God, nobody started this. I'm going to make myself some real dough. So from that moment on, he became the Frog King. And every night, because frogs are only out in the darkness. Remember, you can't go out in the afternoon and hunt for frogs because that's no business. You just won't get them. So he would start out about 10 o'clock at night, and he would head into the swamps every night. Well, he'd come home maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Unfortunately, most of his classes started like at the crack of dawn. They would start off like 7 o'clock in the morning. So here he is. He's doing homework all day long. He's working in the lab. He's working on anatomy. He's working on all this stuff that you have to work on to be a doctor. And all night long, he's hunting frogs. Well, he began to count that he was he says, it got to the point where, but I was making so much money. He says, it was fantastic. He says, some nights when the frogs were eating out on a good hot night, he says, I'd make myself $40-$50 in a night. And he says, I was doing it every night, 7 nights a week. He says, I couldn't stop. He says, I was making more money. He says, man, he's going to make $200-$300 a week in the frogs. And this guy had never had any money in his life. And you know what money will do to you when you never had any, see? So he's got money coming in all over the place. And he begins to really go after the frogs. And he would stay out now later and later, because the later he would stay out, the more frogs he would get, obviously. And so instead of one gunny sack, now he's taken 2 and 3 gunny sacks. And he would come home with 3 gunny sacks full of frogs at 5 in the morning. Well, the inevitable happened. Week after week goes by, and he is taking, he's drinking black coffee. He's eating no-dough sandwiches to keep himself from falling over sideways. He said, I was going out of my skull. He said, you know what happens after a while when you haven't slept for a while? He says, you get very lightheaded. He said, you get to the point where you start to giggle about things. He says, it got to the point where I was laughing in class. They would say, and now we're going to take up spinal meningitis. He said, oh, I'd laugh like, oh, smiling, oh, that's great, oh, oh. And he said, I found myself laughing at crazy stuff, and he says, there would be brief periods, and I would start crying in gym class or some crazy thing. He said, but I couldn't stop. He says, some nights I would come home, I'd say to myself, no frogs tonight. I'm going to sleep. I said, sit there in my room, but then I'd think of all them frogs sitting out there on those lily pads, all that dough, all those bucks. Those frogs. He said, I'd get up and I'd say, no, I'm not going to go out. And I would walk around my apartment. I'd try to read anatomy or something. I've got to get some sleep. And then I'd hear off in the distance, he'd hear a frog. And I'm going out again. Well, it finally happened. It had to happen. One night, I should say one morning, it is now 2:45. It's a Friday night. Well, all of you know what happens on a Friday night in a town. A lot of people are out who ordinarily are not out late. People are going to parties and dates and all this kind of stuff. So he is out in the swamp, knee-deep in the crud. And he is wading around, and he is catching frogs like Billy be damned. It's a good night. And he's got these frogs coming in, see? Now, remember, this guy is studying to be a doctor, and he's also working on trying to develop a dignified air about him, you see, because they have a class in dignity, you know, in most, a class in father figure, 1 and 2 in most medical schools. So he's working on that. It is now 3:30, and he's dead tired. Has not had any sleep for 3 months. And he's got two big sacks full of frogs. Big beauties. Big heavy ones. And big gunny sacks. And he ties the top of them, and he gets back out on the road, and he waits for the bus. The bus comes along, and he takes his gunny sacks into the bus. And the bus driver, you know, he kind of knew him by this time. And he works his way back towards the back of the bus. And he sits down. Another night. Another $40. He sees these two big gunny sacks at his feet. And his head is just buzzing from no sleep. His eyeballs are popping out. It's suddenly without warning. Zap. He's gone. He passes out completely. He falls into that coma-like sleep that you fall into when you have not slept for a month. Just, bap, he's gone. He says he remembers blackness. And he has a certain clinical interest in this next thing that happened to him as a doctor. He said he began to be aware of faint echoing sounds that were coming at him. He said they seemed to come out of a vast tunnel. He was so far deep in sleep that he couldn't really feel or see or do anything. And he tries to... Have you ever tried to fight your way back to consciousness? He says, ah, wow, 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 he hears screams, ah, wow, wow. And he's fighting his way back. Wow, wow, wow. He feels his body being shaken. Ah, he wakes up. And he sees these people are running and screaming and jumping up and down on the seats. He says it's a fantastic scene. It was like on a Fellini movie. He didn't at first know why. He thought there was an accident. And somebody's shaking him. And the bus has stopped and ladies are screaming and guys are climbing out of windows. And then he sees it. The entire bus is filled with giant frogs. Leaping up and down on the seats. Sitting on people's heads. And he said... At first, he thought he was dreaming. He was dreaming of frogs and the buses and the night and all that. He just sit there. He says, it was amazing. I found myself just sitting there with my mouth hanging open watching it. Like I was watching it from a distance, like a movie. He says, then a big frog jumped on my knee. They're my frogs. They're my frogs. He says, he jumps up. He says, instead of playing it cool, like he should have, like pretending he didn't have anything to do with his frogs, he starts running around grabbing them. My frogs! My frogs! 20 minutes later, he is in a jail cell for disturbing the peace, causing undue concern, causing nervous breakdowns among a large number of ladies with blue hair. And he says ever since that time, he gets nervous when he steps aboard a bus. And he turns his coat collar up. Once you're a pariah, friends, you can never really erase terrible memory of the sackcloth and ashes. And don't forget, Monday, 9:15. You got it? I don't care whether you don't like it or not. It's 9:15 Monday. And we'll be on tomorrow night at 10:05. Hang in. This is the Great Frog speaking. The Great Frog. WOR, New York. Next, the 11 o'clock news.